Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ryo was not a big man, and in fact, when this case came out, people were surprised. Somebody even said, "I don't know how someone so small could be so strong." And what he would do was he would use two hammers, one for each hand, his left hand and his right hand, and bludgeon his victims on the head until they died. And that's how he got his nickname, Ryo the Hammerhead, for his two hammers. Hi, I'm Teddy, and welcome to A Brief Case. Today, we are covering the Indonesian serial killer, Ryo the Hammerhead. Antonius Ryo Alex Bulo was born in Indonesia on 2nd May 1978. Now, Ryo was born in Siamen, Indonesia, which is an area on the road between Yogyakarta and Magelang. We don't know much about Ryo's family, but we do know that Ryo's parents, they were preoccupied with their business, and supposedly they didn't really pay too much attention to Ryo. Instead, they described him as a naughty child, and when he lashed out because of that, instead of paying more attention to him, his parents actually sent him to Jakarta, the capital of Indonesia, to be raised with or by his elder brother, who was about 12 years older than him. And this would have been around the time that Ryo was 8 years old. Honestly, for any child to be sent away from their parents, especially at 8 years old, I think it would have felt like a massive betrayal. And especially one that wasn't getting attention that he needed to begin with, it would have felt even worse. Now, Ryo's behavior, to no surprise, actually started to get worse while in Jakarta, which kind of makes sense because it is a rough city, it is a big city, and instead of stepping in, his dad actually ends up renouncing him for religious reasons, which definitely did not help. As is the case with a lot of young people that don't find the kind of attention or support or validation that they need at home, Ryo starts to look for attention and validation elsewhere, and he ends up hanging out with the bad kids in school. He started doing all the things. He skipped school. He drank alcohol while underage. He smoked weed, which is extremely illegal in Indonesia. And he also took part in petty crimes with his little friend gang. So he is in this kind of trajectory of life. His parents didn't give him attention. He acted out. He got sent to Jakarta. His dad renounced him, essentially disowned him. And then now, because of his behavior, he's now hanging out with these gangs, doing these illegal things. And his brother who was supposed to take care of him in Jakarta, eventually also kicks him out. And at this point of time, he's probably still a teenager and he's living alone on the streets of Jakarta, which is very rough. And so now on the street, Ryo has to make money. So he decides that he's going to make money by creating fake vehicle documents. So fake title deeds to cars and things like that. He makes a little money. He has his little illegal living. And at some point of time in his life, he meets a girl and he gets married. But he doesn't actually share the reality of his business with his wife. He basically tells her that, "Look, babe, I am a clothes seller in Jakarta. This is how I make my money." And also, at some point of time, instead of selling fake documents, he ends up getting into car theft, auto theft. He ended up stealing cars from people and selling them. At this point of time, he doesn't quite murder people for their cars yet, but at some point, he's also caught by the police while fleeing in a stolen car, running away in a stolen car, And for most people, this is usually the turning point of their life. But for Rio, he doubles down. And maybe partially because of his personality, maybe this was something that he enjoyed, but actually also because his dealers, the people who were fencing his cars, selling his stolen cars, apparently gave him extremely lucrative offers for his stolen cars. Now, Rio's spree of murders begin in 1997, so actually not too long ago. At this point of time, it gets too dangerous for him to continue operating in Jakarta, so he decides to steal cars in other areas of Indonesia. He was about 23 years old when he got this nickname, and I think it's fair to assume that he was also about that age in his early 20s when he started killing as well. His first victim was in Surabaya, where he murdered a man for his sedan car. There were two other killings in Senarang. When Rio was trying to steal an Isuzu Panther, he also tried to kill a man in Yogyakarta but failed, and this would have been like close-ish to where his parents lived. But because of his failed murder attempt, he moved to another state, Purwokerto. And at this point of time, it's 12 January 2001. He has already killed at least 3 people, and Rio is stalking a businessman, a lawyer, JJ Suraji. Rio follows him all the way to the Rosanda Hotel in Purwokerto, and this is a large, comfortable hotel in the area. He follows his victim to room 135, and then he attacks him. While in the room, Rio bludgeons JJ. He attacks and murders him in order to steal his rented Toyota Kijang. And this is not a quiet murder. And once Rio leaves the hotel staff, they check the room and they find bloodstains on the walls and the ceilings. And in the bed, JJ's body was covered with a blanket. The hotel staff, they call the hotel's security guards and they catch Rio still in the parking lot trying to get the car going. The hotel staff, they arrest him and eventually hand him over to the local police. Because the case was so straightforward, because Rio literally killed somebody on the hotel premises before being caught in the car park trying to run away with a rental car, there wasn't really any question about whether he was guilty or innocent. And he was sentenced to death for his murders on 14th May 2001, but that was not the end of it.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Initially, Rio was held in Kadungpan prison, but was later transferred to a prison on Nusa Bambangan, so a prison on an island, in August 2004. After he's transferred to this new prison, he makes friends with Iwan Zulkarnain, who's in prison for embezzlement. And apparently he embezzled something like 40 million IDR of income tax, which would have been around 3,000 to 4,000 Singapore dollars. And so apparently this is also a point of interest, because why was somebody who was caught for embezzling money placed in the same prison as somebody who was essentially a serial killer? But apparently it was meant to be a deterrent, because something like no matter what kind of crime you come in, you're going to be in the same prison as other even more dangerous people. Now, they were not technically in the same block, because apparently Iwan was placed in a block that was meant for people who were corrupt, so that's how they categorize them. And then Rio was placed in a block for people with murder cases. So I think it's like kind of interesting that they segregate them based on what kind of crime they committed. And so somehow, Iwan and Rio, they strike up a friendship close enough that Rio allows Iwan to teach him the Quran, basically how to recite the Quran. And now we fast forward to 2nd May 2005. This would have been about half a year since Rio moved to this new prison. It was a rainy day and the roof was leaking. And so Iwan and Rio, they were reading through the Quran, the religious texts. And after they were done, Rio was mopping the floor because, you know, the roof was leaking. And Iwan, he had been visiting, he was in the room and he was on the floor smoking. And at some point of time, his cigarette fell on the floor and he picks it up. And as he picked it up, he said, "Why are you so calm for somebody who is on death row? You have no way out. You have no path out." And what is interesting is that on Wikipedia, they have translated this to mean, "You don't seem like somebody who should be on death row." But I thought "you have no path out" would be like a little bit more accurate. And I guess this offended Rio, who was already low-key a little bit unhinged. And he punched and kicked Iwan's head and then he smashed it against the wall. He dragged Iwan's body into the bathroom and then after that, he cleaned himself up and he leaves the cell. And then he's asking the other inmates, he's asking the guards, he's asking everyone for help because he said that Iwan had fallen down and hit his head. And when the police and the other inmates, they look at the scene, it just looks like Iwan has fallen and hit his head on the bathtub. And there are blood spots against the bathtub. And the police, they investigate this for 4 days because at the end of the day, somebody was killed in the prison. And Rio ended up confessing to this murder as well. And after this incident, he was placed in solitary confinement and he wasn't allowed to have any visitors. And finally, on 8th of August 2008, he was brought to the village of Karang Tengah, which is surprising to me because I always thought that they would hold executions in the prison itself. And there, he was executed by a 12-member firing squad. Now, apparently his wife did not know that he was going around murdering people. I think that she honestly thought that he was in the clothing and fabric business and was like really truly apologetic about it. And, you know, at the start of the case, I'm also a bit, I know I sound a bit skeptical of his parents' parenting techniques, but like shitty parenting does not make you a murderer. And there are lots of people with shitty parents that manage to break out of the cycle. And you cannot blame a parent for their child becoming a killer, but that doesn't, you know, mean that they're exempt from me being a little bit confused as to why you would send an 8-year-old who's acting out to your 20-year-old son. It's a bit strange. As always, feel free to drop me a DM at A Briefcase Podcast on Instagram and do join us next week for another brief case.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.